There are some basic underlying things that I want to nag you about incessantly. Okay, so this begins up on the soapbox nagging. Hello.
Hi.
So first of all, this is all an enterprise or a game of representation and inference. The data come from somewhere. That where the data come from, we call sampling. We have a richer definition of sampling that is typically used because data don't just come from people. Data come from people who are in a setting interacting with tasks and stimuli at some moment in time. All of that defines where our data came from. And all of that has to be paid attention to when we analyze our data, because we are going to make an inference from our sample back to the population. And that population, in air quotes, is more than just a group of people. It's a group of people in a setting interacting with tasks and stimuli at a particular moment in time. The better the representation, ta-da, the better the inference. Now, one of the ways that we talked about this is the slide I've shown you several times, which is that every kind of validity feeds into statistical conclusion validity. That's the same thing. External validity, internal validity, measurement validity, all feed into statistical decision conclusion validity. If we booger up any part of the representation, we're likely to get the inference wrong. And don't forget chance. So all of these things working together should make us very interested in replication, programmatic research, and convergence. Because there's all of these decisions, and then there's chance. All right. All of these statistical analyses, particularly the four we're going to do today and Friday, ask the same question. Is the relationship between the variables in the sample strong enough to conclude there's a relationship between the variables in the population? That's it. A bunch of difficult stuff done by mathematicians who busted their ass, fed it to the statisticians who turned it into something that was more recognizable as general principles, and then fed it to us so that we can use it like a shovel to bury a tree. And in all of that, that's the question. Is the relationship between the variables in the sample strong enough to conclude there's a relationship in the population? And then the hardest one. Good morning. Our goal is not p less than 0.05. For two reasons. One, that's not our goal. Second of all, we are absolutely allowed to hypothesize a null. We can look at the relationship between some history variable and some current behavior variable, and we can read the literature on that, and we can think about it real hard, and we can go collect some data. And then when we settle down to run the study that we're planning to do, we can say to ourselves, well, my research hypothesis is these two aren't related. That's going to become more and more common as your data analyses and your research hypotheses become more complex. Think about it this way. How hard would things be if every variable was meaningfully related to every other variable? It'd be a nightmare. We need nulls to simplify our world and give us patterns of data. When you've got a dependent variable, and you've got a bunch of IVs or predictors or whatever you want to call them, and you're trying to decide what variables to study so you can describe this thing, what I encourage you to do is, based on the literature, collect a combination of those, some of which are correlated with it and some of which are not. Our goal is not to find a list of things that are correlated with. Our goal is to be able to take the literature and anticipate what things are positively related, not related, and negatively related. That's theory-born hypothesis testing. That's the cool part. And so the goal is not p less than 0.05. This one's harder. Our goal is not to support our research hypotheses. To hell. Why did I go to all of the trouble? Well, because that's an intermediate step, is to generate hypotheses and test hypotheses. If you've spent much time around philosophers, especially philosophers of science, modern ones, you'll discover that they can't agree when we learn shit. Some philosophers of science say we learn things when we support hypotheses. Others, like Karl Popper, claim we only really learn things when our theories blow up. And as they blow up, we discover what they should be. If any of you are engineers, that's destructive testing applied to theory. So it's not about p less than 0.05. Damn it, that was going to be easy because that one's always on the stats output. That's always there somewhere. You get a p-value. And it's not to support our research hypotheses. So what the hell is it? It goes all the way back to the first thing that we showed you. Our real goal is statistical conclusion validity. When we're done and we've stated our conclusion, that's what we got right. Now, obviously, that's going to be speeded up if we make good guesses about what things are and are not related, and we have good representation so that our inference is accurate. But remember, it's not about rejecting the null. It's not even about supporting the research hypothesis. It's about getting it right. And that goes back to what I keep lumping on to you, is more and more responsibility to know the literature. And not just the literature findings, but the literature methodology. You have to start asking, well, how'd you measure that? How'd you sample that? Where were they when they took this questionnaire? All of that shit matters. All right. So, questions about stuff before I start there and launch into ANOVA. Then let's launch into ANOVA. One of the things you've got to be able to do if you're going to crunch numbers is you have to know when to use which statistical model. We're going to have four that we're going to focus on. And they're kind of a pain in the butt. The reason they're kind of a pain in the butt is almost all of the language that was designed for talking about designs and analyses was created for between groups comparisons of all different kinds. Within groups comparisons have always thrown a booger into it. You got to decide which way you're going to set up the data. Different statistical packages set things up different ways, whether they're going to be wide or tall. Whether it's a line for each case or a line for each condition. In a between groups design, case and condition are the same thing because everybody's in only one condition. In a within groups design, a case is in multiple conditions. So, you got to be able to pick the right statistical model. Since we're doing bivariate analyses, two variable analyses, pleasantly, there's only three basic possibilities. If both variables are quantitative, we're going to use a Pearson's correlation. Usually, more later. If we have two qualitative or categorical variables, we're going to use Pearson's chi-square, which is a really important statistic. I'll talk more about why it's really important on Friday, but the thing is, we need to be able to pick either qualitative or quantitative dependent variables. There was a time when everybody used ANOVA and everybody used quantitative dependent variables, and sometimes they were forcing it and it wasn't going well. I'll tell you stories. And if we have one quantitative variable and one qualitative variable, typically the qualitative variable is the IV, the quantitative variable is the DV, we use an ANOVA. This is a fine place to start. We will do better as we go. If I get to keep you the whole time, by April, you'll have 28 different models that you can sort out. We're going to build a script. Here's the beginning of the script. Look at the kind of variables you have. If you have two qualitative variables, say Pearson's correlation. I lied. Two quantitative variables, Pearson's correlation. Two qualitative variables, Pearson's chi-square. And you sort of need to use both of those, not so much here, but out in public, because Pearson did more things than just these two statistics. there's more than this one kind of correlation, and Lord knows there's more than this one kind of chi-square, especially in maximum likelihood estimation based models. There's chi-squares everywhere, and things that are chi-squares that we don't call chi-squares. So sometimes you got to be a little bit precise. It's kind of like, I don't want you to say random assignment anymore. I want you to say what kind of random assignment, because some of them are smiley face and some of them aren't. That sort of nagging push towards precision. And, of course, there's the pink thing. The secret is to figure out each variable, and then once you have the variables, figure out the statistic. Slow down. Take a moment. Give yourself a chance. We want to know whether there's a relationship between someone's income and their amount of political campaign contributions. Income. I don't know why that says IQ. Sorry, that should be income. No, they're not all that well correlated either, disappointingly. Actually, knowing my measured IQ score, I'm pretty happy that they're not that correlated. So, income, qualitative or quantitative?
Quantitative.
Quantitative. Contributions? Quantitative. Now, are we absolutely sure about either of these? We're just sort of going with it. Right? When you have a data set in front of you, one way to tell if something's been operationalized as quantitative or qualitative is look at the value labels. If the value labels are dogs, cats, and fish, then pets is kind of pet. If there aren't value labels and you look at the data and it's a distribution, probably is number of pets. But that's why we have variable labels and why you should ask. So, how'd you operationalize this? So we're going to assume these are both quantitative because I wasn't trying to be tricky this time. I have two quantitative variables. What statistic? Pearson's correlation. We want to know whether employed and self-employed people make different amounts of campaign contributions. Employment is qualitative, one or the other. Contribution still looks quantitative. When we have one of each, we're going to use a correlate, Pearson's ANOVA. How are we doing? None of this is mysterious, right? Even on a Wednesday morning? We want to know whether Democrats or Republicans are more likely to make a political contribution. Here we have registration, Democrat and Republican, qualitative or quantitative? Qualitative. Now, the way that we operationalized contribution this time, if we say are more likely to, that means we're talking about whether or not. So this time, contribution is what?
Qualitative.
Qualitative. And with two qualitative variables, we have our friend, the chi-square. Now, there's three kinds of language that I want you to be familiar with. When people talk about research hypotheses, particularly when they're talking about the most common type, which is associative hypothesis, there's a couple phrasing types that you're likely to see more often. I expect there's a relationship between two things. I believe we'll find there's a relationship between. My hypothesis is that there is a relationship between. So relationship between is just a phrasing. Nothing changes. You look at the two variables. If they're both qualitative, pick chi-square. They're both quantitative, pick correlation. It's one of each, pick ANOVA. Many of the relationships that we look at in our research are not anywhere near perfect relationships. In fact, many of them are pretty weak. And before you get bummed out about that, just stop and think causally for a minute. Just in your head, get any outcome variable that you care about. Score on a test, social skills you express in a situation, how well you do on a paper, whatever. Are there only a couple causes of that outcome, or are there a whole bunch of causes of that outcome?
A whole bunch.
Whole bunch, right? Very few things have a single cause. And you need to remember that whenever you're listening to any news source. Oh, no, that's because of this. There's 50 things going on. Don't pick one. Because-ing. Now, if in bivariate research, the most common research and the first statistics we're going to work with, you look at the relationship between just one of those and your DV, how strong is that one part of the whole relationship going to be? Make sense? And that's why null hypothesis testing has become popular. We literally want to know, is this one of the many things that's related to the criterion? That criterion, dependent variable, is not being pushed around by just one or two things. It's probably being pushed around by dozens. Is this probably one of the dozens? Is the relationship in my bivariate study sample strong enough to conclude that this variable is part of the whole story in the population? You with me? Impolite people like to say that null hypothesis testers are bottom feeders. You'll take anything that's not a zero. Yeah. Yeah. Will. Yes?
So how do you measure the strength of that relationship?
I got it for you. I'll show you. We are going to, after we look at all four of the models, correlation, chi-square, ANOVA, we're going to back up and look at how to turn all of those into what we'll call an effect size estimate. So we're going to do two things all the time. We're going to decide whether or not there's probably a relationship, and we're going to have an estimate of how strong that relationship is for every model that we look at together. Great question. And so it's the same thing. I expect, tend. Don't let the language screw you up. It's still two qualitative is chi-square, two quantitative is chi-square, one of each is ANOVA. Here's another piece of language that I want you to be familiar with. This is the other kind of if-then. The first kind of if-then you know sounds causal because it is. If-then implies causality. This is the mathematical or statistical if-then. If-then more likely. There's no causal statement here. This is a predictive or an associative statement. But it's in the phrasing of an if-then, and you have to notice the if-then more likely. That's what makes it a statistical or an associative phrase. Again, I notice. But what I'm really doing is I'm looking at the variables, and I'm trying to decide whether those variables are two qualitative, two quantitative, or one of each. How are we doing? So when do we use ANOVA? Whenever you want to compare the means on a quantitative variable for two different groups or conditions, use an ANOVA. Says statistically, when you are testing for a relationship between one quantitative variable and one qualitative variable by comparing the means of the quantitative variable for the categories of the qualitative variable. Qual and quant. That's why we started there. We started with variable and constant. The next thing we did, qual and quant. There is a fairly strong tendency in the behavioral sciences for the IV to be the categorical variable and the DV or outcome or response variable to be the quantitative variable. Pretty strong tendency. For no mathematical or statistical reason. ANOVA doesn't care which variable is the IV and which variable is the DV. Okay? And you see this, probably the place you see it most often is in finance and in developmental, where the categorical variable is the outcome variable. Which thing did you pick? Which age category are you in? Which attachment category are you in? So I look at your age, and I want to see if the age tells me which attachment category you're in. All the statistic does is it looks at, is there a relationship between the qualitative variable and the quantitative variable? You have to decide which of those variables is the one that comes first and influences the other. But the ANOVA doesn't care. And neither does SPSS. One of the most interesting mistakes you can make as a young researcher in SPSS is you can flip the IV and the DV in the little boxes in the GUI. And if you do, it will do exactly what you told it to do. It will find each unique value of what you intended to be the quantitative DV, And for each unique value, it will calculate the average category of people who have that value. Absolutely sideways. Not a number that you want at all. So you got to make sure that not only do you know you're working with one qualitative and one quantitative variable, but which one's which. So, for which of these would we apply an ANOVA? GRE and public-private school. Is that one qualitative and one quantitative?
Yes.
Yeah. School attended and type of job?
No.
No. Favorite sport and age?
Yes.
Yeah. Age group and performance speed?
Yes.
Yes. Income and years of education?
No.
No. Income and highest educational degree?
Yeah.
How are we doing? Okay? The only thing, like so much else in here, is remembering to do it. So when we report ANOVA results, what we normally do is we capture the data into the conditions and represent the mean and the standard deviation for each qualitative variable. Remember, this is intended as inferential information. This is intended that if we had the whole population of the group that we sampled driving at night, that the average of the population would be 12.5 and the standard deviation would be 2. And that means that about 2/3 of them would be between 10.4 and 14.6. All that stuff we talked about when you get a single mean is true when you're getting means to compare. And then what the statistic is going to do is it's going to ask, sing along with me, is the mean difference between the groups in the sample big enough to conclude there's a mean difference between these groups in the population? It's always that. It's always that. So, if we had GRE and public-private school, we would report the average GRE for each type of school. Make sense? Favorite sport and age. We would report the average for each
favorite sport.
Failure rate and brand of computer. We would report the average for each. Age group and performance speed. Report the average speed for each performance age group. Sorry, thank you. And income and highest educational degree, we would report the average
income
for each degree. How are we doing? When we display things, we can also use graphs. Make sure you know how to get graphs in and out of SPSS. You don't have to make all of them all the time. Just make sure that you can follow them. Typically, there's two ways to make a graph in SPSS. You can make a graph within the ANOVA part, or you can make a graph separately in the graphing part. Self-actualize. The advantage of tables is you get more complete data. If you want to put whiskers on your bars, make sure that you tell the reader what sort of whiskers they are. The whiskers can be standard deviations, they can be standard errors, they can be standard error, the difference between things, or they can be confidence intervals. Make sure that the reader knows, because in particular, readers typically like to look at whiskers and think that overlap means non-significant difference. Non-overlap means significant difference. That isn't true for all of the things that we named. It depends on how you're setting up the whiskers, whether you get that visual significance test out of the graph.